Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial debut. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School at Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on what the hell's going on here when we come back. You know, if you're earning about $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep 40% of what you create and produce. The government gets the other 60%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you think your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year. And you're going to end up with about 25%, and the government will end up with 75%. Now, all that means is that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more, or about 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. Now, that's guaranteed by Congress and the U.S. IRS. You produce 100% more, and you get 8% of it. Now, there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners, and that's where you're at with $100,000 a year in the top 5%, and then only net 25% of that. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package, and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information. It answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we're paying so much and receiving so little in return. And let me teach you how to do just that in our Tax and Status School, now available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct and order yours today. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. And remember, our Tax and Status School is also available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. Call right now before you forget. Hey, what the hell's going on? It's a question that we all ask out on the job. You know, just what the hell is this anyway? What is this all about? You ever ask that question? Well, I was picking up a few news articles across my desk the other day, and I see here that marijuana is the top U.S. cash crop, analysts say. Did you get that? Marijuana is the top U.S. cash crop. Not corn, not wheat, not cotton, not soybeans. Marijuana. Wait a minute. Marijuana is illegal. You can't grow marijuana in the United States, can you? Well, listen to this story. U.S. growers produce nearly $35 billion worth of marijuana every year, making this illegal crop the country's largest cash crop. It's bigger than corn and wheat combined. Now, all you wheat farmers and all you corn farmers out there and all of you ethanol producers out there, get this? A bunch of ragtag hippies running around hiding in the national forests are growing more dollars worth of a cash crop called marijuana than all of you guys combined. And they're doing it with heavy threats of jail and confiscation of their property. It's a testimony to free enterprise. That's what that is. A testimony to the viability of the marketplace and the free enterprise system. I mean, you guys are out here growing corn and wheat and soybeans and cotton and all these cash crops with price supports and public displays and tractorcades to Washington. And you've got a farm bill and all of the trappings of politics that go along with it. And a bunch of guys out here who don't have any price supports, don't have any tractors, can't even devote the land that they own to the production of this crop. They have to go out and hide it to grow it, produce more than all of you wheat and corn farmers combined. And that's just the first paragraph. The report conducted by John Getman, a public policy analyst and former head of the National Organization for the Reform of marijuana laws, also concluded that 5 U.S. states produce more than $1 billion worth of marijuana apiece: California, Tennessee, Kentucky, Hawaii, and Washington. California's production alone was about $13.8 billion, according to Getman, who waged an unsuccessful 6-year legal battle to force the government to remove marijuana from a list of drugs deemed to have no medical value. Tom Riley, a spokesman for the U.S. Office of National Drug Control Policy, said that he would not confirm the report's conclusions or the size of the country's marijuana crop. But he said the government estimated overall U.S. illegal drug use at about $200 billion a year. Now that's marijuana, cocaine, and heroin, $200 billion a year. Marijuana is $35 billion worth at the grower level. Now, Getman's figures were based on several government reports between 2002 and 2005, estimating the United States production at more than 10,000 metric tons of marijuana a year. That's 10,000 metric tons of marijuana. Well, let's just see how many truckloads that is. A truck hauls 40, so let's put 10,000 in here. And they actually don't haul 40, but let's just divide that by 40 tons, and that's 250 truckloads. Now, that's 250 truckloads of marijuana that's being produced out here on the National Forest or on somebody else's ground, hidden away in the forests, you know, where you can't pick it up with a satellite or with a helicopter. And this is what gets through. I mean, they catch and confiscate a bunch of it every year, make a big production out of it. He calculated that the producer price per pound of marijuana at $1,606 a pound, based on a national survey data showing retail prices of marijuana at $2,400 to $3,000 a pound between 2001 and 2005. The total value of 10,000 metric tons of marijuana at $1,606 a pound would be $35.8 billion at the producer level. By comparison, the United States produced an average of $23.3 billion worth of corn annually from 2003 to 2005, and $12.2 billion worth of soybeans. $12.2 billion worth of hay, rather, nearly $11.1 billion worth of vegetables, and $7.4 billion worth of wheat, the report said. Now, Getman said that the tenfold increase in U.S. marijuana production from 1,000 metric tons in 1981 to 10,000 metric tons in 20 years showed the country was failing to control marijuana by making its cultivation and use illegal. Yeah, I got to underline that. Getman showed that the tenfold increase. Now, we're producing 10 times more marijuana in America today than we did 20 years ago. 10 times more. My God, what if we could increase corn production by 10 times or wheat production by 10 times? Again, I tell you, it's the marketplace. The free marketplace. It just works like a dream. And the guys that are producing this aren't paying a dime's worth of income tax or Social Security tax on this $35 billion. All you wheat and corn farmers and soybean and hay growers and vegetable producers, you're all paying taxes. These guys ain't paying a nickel's worth of tax to anybody. And I'm telling you, it's just the miracle of the marketplace as opposed to the collectivist, communist marketplace that comes out of Washington, D.C. Think about it. I mean, you know, you guys go out here and you get a farm bill passed through Congress and they're paying you price supports so that you can make ends meet and pay your bills every year. These guys don't have any price supports. All you taxpayers out there aren't paying a dime to support the growth of marijuana. It's the marketplace that does it all. And you know, before we had the communists take over our government and give us the farm bill and start giving us price supports and start giving us these directives, you know, out of Washington, people used to grow wheat and corn and soybeans and they did it profitably in the free marketplace, you know, before we had the government come in and regulate wheat and corn. And everywhere the government comes in to regulate, you know, it's like the president say, I'm just here to help the American people. I'm here to protect the American people. Well, the protection doesn't apply to marijuana growers and, you know, they don't need your protection, do they? They seem to be doing all right all by themselves right there in the free marketplace. And by the way, as long as we're talking about law, I know somebody's going to write me a nasty letter and say, oh my God, it's illegal and you're just espousing this illegal activity. Well, I don't think marijuana growing is illegal. Let me give you a little lesson here in legality. If we took a look at Genesis chapter 1 in the Bible, I know it's kind of a crazy thing to do, but let's just do it for funny, just to be funny. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 28, and God blessed them and he said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the earth or the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. And I want to point out, have dominion. You see that? Over every living thing that moves upon the earth. Now, marijuana plants are living things upon the earth. And in verse 29, God Almighty gave that to all of us. That includes marijuana and cocaine and heroin poppies and, you know, wheat and corn and beans and soybeans and hay and vegetables. Did you catch that? Let me read it to you again. He said, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. Verse 29, he went a step further. He said, and the Eternal said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed to you it shall be for meat. Wait a minute. Isn't marijuana green? Isn't marijuana a plant? Doesn't it produce seed? And here's the creator of the universe. Now, I admit now he was dumb. I mean, God Almighty, just dumb as a box of rocks to give us this horrible plant called marijuana. But I did want to point out that I didn't write this. I didn't sneak into your house last night and write that into your Bible. Why don't you go pick it up? You know, even if you got a Catholic Bible, You'll find that in there in Genesis 1, 29 and 30. Now listen to this. It gets better. And to every beast of the earth and every fowl of the air and everything that creeps upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. Now look up that word meat. It's called food. Now, I haven't had a marijuana salad lately. As a matter of fact, I never have had a marijuana salad, but it is green. And it's an herb, of which there are about, there must be 100 of these herbs that are very common, 82 common herbs, and there's probably 100 or more. In fact, I saw one botanical display one time in a health food store, and I just counted all the little boxes, and he had 142 boxes. And each one of them's got a name on there for an herb. There wasn't a single one of them on there said marijuana, cocaine, heroin. But all of those herbs, you know, have certain medicinal values to them. They give off oils and things like that, you know, like essential oils and things. Now, who is it that told us that we couldn't have marijuana? It was the United States government coming out of Washington, D.C. It wasn't the people of California who voted it in. The majority of the people, I mean, so much for democracy, huh? I mean, you know, we Americans like to talk about, you know, the majority rules and democracy. That's a bunch of crap. The people of California voted in marijuana on a referendum. They said, hey, that's what we want out here. And then the federal government came in and said, no, you can't have that. It's bad for you people. The creator of the universe didn't think it was bad for you. He's the one that created it and gave it to you and said, it's green bear seed, and I'm giving it to you. It was your government that took it away from you, like they did bloodroot and a whole host of other forms of botanicals. And there's an important reason for it. I mean, it isn't that the government's stupid. The government does that because it interferes with the profit stream of somebody out there. Marijuana interferes with the profit stream of the alcohol and the tobacco business. That's what it's all about. See, marijuana in this country was legal until 1937, just 4 years after they repealed prohibition. See, they took your alcohol away from you in 1920 with the 18th Amendment, and then they came along here and took marijuana away from you in 1937. God never took your alcohol away from you. He told you, he said, no drunkard shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he didn't take your booze away from you and say, well, I'm going to protect you from yourself because you people are so damn dumb that you're not able to manage your marijuana, not able to manage your alcohol intake. He said, well, there it is. Let's see if you can use it responsibly. So anyway, there's what that story is all about. Now, marijuana has become a pervasive and ineradicable part of the economy of the United States. The contribution that this market is making to the nation's gross domestic product is overlooked in the debate over effective control. Like all profitable agricultural crops, marijuana adds resources and value to the economy, he added. The focus of public policy should be how to effectively control this market through regulation and taxation in order to achieve immediate and realistic goals, such as reduced teenage access. Riley said that illegal drug use was a serious part of the economy, but he rejected the notion of an economic argument for legalizing marijuana. He said marijuana use was an inherently harmful activity with serious physical and mental health consequences, he said. More American teens were in treatment centers for marijuana dependency than for all other drugs combined. Well, excuse me. Hang on a second. We Americans, you know, we have a gluten problem in this country, and there are people in this country that are allergic to wheat. Now, remember, wheat up here was, how big is this wheat business? They got a number up here. $1 billion worth of marijuana, $13.8 billion in California alone. And he goes down here, and he said, by comparison, the United States produced an average of $23 billion worth of corn. And how much wheat was there down here? I saw wheat down here. Yeah. 7.4 billion worth of wheat. And a certain number of people are allergic to this wheat over here. They're gluten intolerant and can't eat the stuff at all. And do we take wheat off of the market because these people are gluten intolerant? These people are in treatment. People with gluten intolerance, boys and girls, go to doctors and clinics and hospitals because they're gluten intolerant and they're in treatment, aren't they? And so you got some people that are in marijuana treatment. God gives you marijuana, and you got to put these people in treatment. God gave us wheat, you know. I don't know why the government doesn't protect us from wheat. I don't know why the government doesn't protect us from those doctors. The doctors kill 130,000 people a year by giving them drugs that come from Merck and Pfizer and GlaxoSmithKline. 130,000 people a year. How many of these kids are dying from marijuana use? Huh? Come on, kids, give me a break. It doesn't have anything to do with your health, your safety, or your welfare. It has to do with the profit stream of big pharmaceutical companies. And I got to say here that, you know, marijuana, the top U.S. cash crop, that's a testimony to free market economics if there ever was one, bigger than wheat and corn combined. And they do it all in the underground free market, the underground economy. Hey, there's another story that came across my desk over here that made me say, what the hell's going on here? It's called Rising Metal Prices Prompt a Ban on Melting and Export of Coins. Now, back in 1965, our illustrious president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, took silver coin out of circulation. We used to have silver coins in this country for you children that aren't old enough to remember that. We had gold coins in this country. And our founding fathers wrote into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10 that no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. 17 words. And they thought that they had banned paper money from America forever. Well, boy, wouldn't those guys be surprised if they came to life today. So the moral to the story is we had these gold and silver coins until President Roosevelt took our gold away from us in 1933, and then President Johnson took our silver away from us, kind of like taking our marijuana and our cocaine and heroin away from us, because we're not big enough boys and girls to handle that stuff, and we need a bureaucrat like Ted Kennedy or Dianne Feinstein or somebody in Washington to tell us what to eat and, you know, what's good for us and what isn't. So anyway, the moral of the story is that they gave us clad coinage in 1965. So if you take a look at your coins, you won't see any silver coins in general circulation out there unless it's by accident. You'll see, but 1965, your quarters and your dimes and so on, you know, those are in your 50-cent pieces. Those have what we call clad coins. They're made out of copper and nickel and a couple other things. But now, because of the inflation, those 3-cent coins, now get this, in 1965, it cost 3 cents to mint one of those clad quarters. and I don't know what it was for a penny, but you know, in 1982, they took the copper out of the penny. The penny was the last coin that you had that had real metal in it until 1982. Then they made that a clad sandwich coin, too. And they debased the coin. Well, now listen to this story. Now, with all of these clad coins, all these debased coins that have all of this debased metal in it, the United States Mint, concerned that rising metal prices could lead to widespread recycling of pennies and nickels, has banned melting or exporting them. The Mint is also testing dozens of cheaper alternative metal compositions in the expectation that Congress will mandate a change when it meets in the new year. According to calculations by the Mint, the metal value of pennies, which are made of copper-coated zinc, is now more than 1 cent. The metal value of 5-cent coins made from a copper-nickel blend is up to 7 cents, according to the U.S. Mint. And adding to the cost of manufacturing, that means the Mint now spends 1.73 cents for every penny and 8.74 cents for every nickel that it makes. Until 1982, pennies were made of 95% copper. The commodity metal value of one of those coins, which still make up a large percentage of the pennies in circulations, is now up to 2.13 cents, according to the Mint. If even 1% of the 150 billion pennies and 20 billion nickels in circulation were claimed for salvage, replacing them would cost taxpayers $43 million, the Mint estimates. I'm going to put down, were claimed for salvage here. Let me underline that for you. In an interview yesterday, Edmund C. Moy, who is the director of the Mint, said, officials were aware of only a few people asking if it was legal to melt coins for their metal value. Without the ban, which takes effect tomorrow, it would be. The new ban also forbids exporting pennies or nickels in any significant quantities, and while the Mint is not concerned about tourists, pocket change, or numismatic collections, it wants to block wholesale export of coins to countries where recycling them for their metal content could be economically viable. Pennies, or penalties rather, for violating the ban can include a $10,000 fine and up to 5 years in jail, and we want to make it clear to anyone considering this that it's not worth it, Mr. Moy said. All right, now let's pause here for a moment. We have a word that we use in metals. It's called the melt value. What is this $20 double eagle valued at if we melted it down for its gold content? Or what is this silver coin worth, let's say a quarter, if we melted it down for its silver value? You see, money, to be valuable, has to have a store of value. Well, when they made these clad coins back in 1965, what they were doing is replacing the silver coins, which actually were worth more than a quarter. And that's because of inflation. You see, our founding fathers decided that we needed Article 1, Section 10 in our Constitution to protect the value of our money from the deprivations of our politicians. Yeah, that's right, the deprivations of politicians who were going to inflate the coinage. Now, you see, when we use gold and silver coin, and I'm going to, again, go to the Bible. I know, it's obnoxious, but let's do it just to be funny, shall we? In Leviticus chapter 19, verses 35 and 36, we get a little story here from God himself. He says, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meteyard, in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall you have. I'm the eternal your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. Just weights and balances. Well, we need just weights and balances to keep the butcher honest, you know, when he sells us a pound of hamburger, but not the Mint when they sell us a 3-cent coin for 25 cents and screw us out of 22 cents. That's okay, evidently. That's what they're telling us out of Washington. It's all right to screw people out of their money, but don't do it if you're the butcher down here over a pound of hamburger. In Deuteronomy chapter 25, he has another statute over here, and this goes to what we call thou shalt not steal. government has been in the process of stealing from us for so long that they've forgotten that there was a law against it. In verse 13, he says, you shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you. For all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Eternal your God. You know, the God of creation, this is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, calls these sandwich coins and these paper dollars that you're running around with an abomination. That's his opinion of it. An abomination. Now, when we had just weights and balances, we had a certain amount of gold in the coin. And that coin, say a $20 double eagle, which has about 1 ounce of gold in it, and gold selling for $600 an ounce. So if you've got one of those double eagles, you could take the thing and melt it down, and you'd get about $600 worth of gold out of it. And then you could go make a jewelry piece, or you could go sell it to somebody that's in the gold business or whatever it was, because the coin itself was a store of value. The coin itself was the representation. It was the actual value of your labor. You put in a day's work, and you got paid $20, and you got an ounce of gold or whatever it was you got paid, and you had that ounce of gold in a store of value. It was right there. It was in your hand. You could take it and trade it anywhere you wanted, and you'd always have that store of value. Well, somebody woke up one day and said, well, let's change that. Let's give these people a piece of paper that says $20 on it. And the people said, well, that's fair enough. So they went out and they started buying, selling, and trading with these paper, pieces of paper. And what difference does it make? After all, you could take the piece of paper in, put it on the counter, and get a $20 gold piece. Or you could take the gold piece into the bank, and you could get a $20 bill, and they were exchangeable until 1933. Then the government comes along and closes the gold window and leaves you with the paper. Now you can't get your gold back. Isn't that just real special? That was a theft. That is your United States government stole all of your gold, is what they did to you. All right, but, you know, you still had your silver coin. So from 1933 to 1964, you know, you had your silver coin, and the silver coins had a store of value. There was so many dollars or so many cents worth of actual silver in the coin. And so then your government came along and said, well, listen, now that it costs us 30 cents to make one of these silver coins, these silver quarters, we're going to make them out of nickel and copper now. And so they did. And this old adage of bad money drives out good drove all of the silver coins off the market. And so now they're in bags, and we buy, sell, and trade them. And right now a bag of silver, it's $1,000 worth of silver quarters, sells for about $10,000, about 10 to 1. And it's because they printed so much paper money, and that's what they're doing today, printing a lot of paper money. It's called M3. They have now made the common penny and the sandwich coins, which have no particular store of value because there's nothing very valuable in them. It now costs 2 cents to make one of those pennies. It now costs about 8 cents to make one of those nickels. And so what are they doing? Now that you've got a nickel that's actually worth a nickel and you've got a penny that's actually worth a penny, your mint comes along and says, oh my God, don't you dare melt those coins down for their real value. And then we'll go to Congress next year and come up with a new metal mixture, you know, something like aluminum or steel, to take their place, because your money is becoming so worthless. Boys and girls, the very purpose for money was to make a store of value. And what is your government telling you? We want to make your store of value, your money, more worthless. Just thought I'd share that with you. And what does the God of creation call it? He calls it a damn abomination. Here, let me give you a reminder here, now that we're through with the abominable news. And that is, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and our archive, and that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Hang on, let me get rid of the static. Let's try that. Now, most of the endorsements and recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station or God Almighty Himself. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, I got to give you one more reminder here, if I can find it. Here it is. And that is that we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative methods being used for the treatment and healing of cancer. It's a disease that now affects one out of every two Americans, that's 50% of us, how to prevent degenerative diseases and abdominal fat and the use and application of essential oils, super nutritional foods containing more nutrients and fewer calories. And the list of things that we cover in this class would get pretty long. The class also includes hands-on teaching, the paperwork, allergic reaction testing and training so that you can do it at home, acupressure application and training so you can find the pressure points too, and much, much more to contribute to your ongoing health. Class will be coming February 5th through the 9th here in Isabella, Missouri. If you're interested, give my wife Jackie a call here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, my wife is a 28-year cancer survivor. She's had cancer for 28 years and survived it three times. It's a how-to rather than a what-to type program. Medical doctors, you know, keep it pretty simple. Just come in here and take your chemotherapy. And the alternative therapists, they have a very complex program that deals with lysine and amino acids and enzymes and 92 vitamins and minerals and fatty acids. And they've got, you know, 45 bottles of this and two juicers and five books, and it's damn confusing and complex. And I said to my wife one day, I said, you know, the reason that the allopathic medical doctors are able to sell cancer therapy and do it so effectively is because they use the KISS principle and they keep it simple. It's so simple that as dumb as we are, we can all go to the doctor's office, sit there patiently while he rolls up our sleeves and gives us a shot of this or that, or he tells us to go over here and get on this table and take off our clothes, and we can do all of those things. But when it comes to alternative therapy, that is where we personally have to take control of our medical regimen to cure ourselves of a debilitating disease like cancer, it is so complicated and so complex. And the naturopaths and all the PhDs, they use, you know, they want to impress us with five-syllable double-jointed knee-action words that impress PhDs and confuse all of us plumbers. That's been my observation. Now, if we could come up with a plan to make this thing simple, you know, so that as dumb as we are, as plumbers, carpenters, and electricians, that we had a how-to rather than a what-to, here's what you need to do. If somebody could write this down on a piece of paper and say, here's how to do this. Here's how you cure cancer. There's 10 ways to do it, and here's how. I said that to my wife today. I said, could you put something together that's simple? I mean, after all, you're an expert at it. You've been doing it for 28 years. Now, just in case you didn't know, if you've got cancer, just to pick a disease, not the only, but a disease, cancer, your chances of surviving it for 5 years are 37% down here at Dr. Joe Walsh's office. Just the average Joe six-pack doctor. You walk into his office, 37% of you will live for 5 years, 63% of you will die in less than 5 years. And we don't know how long the guys that lasted for 5 years are going to make it. Are they going to make it for 10, 15, or 20? Well, my wife's made it for 28, and she's in good health. You know, for a lady with cancer, she's in pretty good health. And I said, you know, the doctors are making billions of dollars off of this and promising us a cancer cure, and we haven't seen Jack Diddley squat out of any of that. All the tax dollars that have been squandered, and we never will, because as long as there's doctors researching, there isn't going to be a cure. We already got 10. I don't think we need 12 or 15. So there's that story. Give us a call here at the law school, and we'll see if we can't help you solve that problem. Now, you know, I subscribe to the International Forecaster, and I recommend it pretty highly. There's a guy by the name of Bob Chapman, Robert Chapman, and he puts out a newsletter, and it's one of many. I mean, hell, there's 100 newsletters out there. But he puts out this newsletter. It comes out twice a week over the email machine, so Wednesday and Saturday. So I kind of look forward to every Wednesday and Saturday, kind of like getting the Magombo Guru, you know. Every Wednesday, Magombo sends out his newsletter. You can get that off of kitco.com, very simple, and kitco.com, free. Chapman isn't free. It costs you $130 a year, but then, you know, you get what you pay for. If you want something free, then go get the Magombo newsletter. It's free, and it's worth every penny of it. And then there's this other one costs $130, and it's cheap at double price. So not that I want to run down Dottie over here, because he's a pretty good guy, too. But he puts out a little 7-page newsletter over here on Wednesdays, and I recommend it very highly, called kitco.com. Just go to Kitco and then go to, you know, www.kitco.com/ind/Dottie, and then you'll get that newsletter. Well, here in the newsletter, you know, this newsletter that comes from the International Forecaster, you get some stories that come in here from time to time. And I like to share some of those stories with you, because every once in a while, you know, we get a pretty good story that comes out of here, and it tells us what the hell is going on here. What's this all about? Can you explain that to me? Well, anyway, the International Forecaster, if you want to check it out, they've got a webpage. It's called the International Forecaster. It's kind of a long title, and it's all one word, and it's spelled just exactly the way I described it. It's called theinternationalforecaster.com. See how simple that is? Check out our website. Probably tell you how much the newsletter is and so on. U.S. Army officials have told the Bush administration that they're out of money. They have run through their $168 billion annual budget, and they're so broke that they're cannibalizing equipment and operations in the war zone just to keep it going. The Army needs $24 billion just to pay its current bills. These shortfalls have caused the layoff of janitorial staff, closing base swimming pools, and even having base lawns moved. $3 billion has been cut for replacement weapons and heavy use in Iraq, such as armored Humvees, two-way radios, remote-controlled surveillance aircraft, and trucks. National Guard units now lack 40% of their critical readiness gear because it's gone to Iraq, and the Army lacks funds to replace it. Huge amounts have been spent. $773 billion on retention bonus this year versus $85 3 years ago. Recruiting is $300 million more this year than 2003. The quality of soldiers has plunged because the enlistees have scored in the lower third of aptitude tests. As a result, the Army issued 8,500 moral waivers this year compared with just 2,200 10 years ago. Now, that involves those with past criminal records for drug convictions and other proven legal or moral violations. In 7 years, the cost of equipping a soldier rose from $7,000 to $24,000. Humvees cost $32,000 in 2001. Today, they cost $225,000. And that's because we use Halliburton, Kellogg, Root, and Brown. We couldn't take another 20,000 troops in Iraq because we can't equip and protect them all. All the money has gone to the military-industrial complex. What the hell is going on here? Well, let's take a look at this. First paragraph. The cost of a Humvee, which in 2001, you know, before this war got started, cost $32,000. You can buy those Humvees over here at your local dealer out here on the street. I don't know what they cost, $50,000 or something like that. They now cost $225,000. Now, since 2000, the inflation rate in this country has gone up 30%. So let's just take $32,000 in our famous Sharp EL 1197G3 Texas Instruments calculator here. Let me plug in $32,000 times. What was that number here again? 32,000, and now we want to do 0.30, 30%. That's $9,600. So from 2001 until 2006, the price of a Humvee should be another $10,000. 32,000, we should be paying 42,000, but we're not. We're paying 225,000. 225. So what's that costing us? Well, let's take $225,000, and let's divide that by 32,000. And that's 7.03. It costs 7 times as much today to buy one of those Humvees as it did in 2001. 7 times as much. Is there money to be made in war? Yeah, 7 times more money. So when you get involved in a war, the defense contractors, in this case Halliburton and General Motors and Chrysler, whoever's making the Humvees, and I'm not just cycling on or circling out Halliburton per se, but they're a big player. They're the ones, you know, that Vice President Dick Cheney was the CEO of before he became vice president. And they're the ones that get these no-bid contracts. I mean, they just get the deal. You know, just step up here and we're going to give you the business. Kind of like walking in, you know, and picking up your phone, calling a contractor and say, come out and remodel my kitchen. The guy comes out and he says, hey, you just tell the guy, go remodel my kitchen, send me the bill. Now, in this country, we used to have a thing called competitive bids. Competitive bids. And it was kind of the common sense thing to do. You know, before we Americans became total communists, we used to have a thing that we called competitive bidding. And so what we did, we made Bethlehem Steel, General Motors, and United States Steel, and any other contractor that wanted to bid on making tanks or furnishing steel for bridges or doing whatever it is that we wanted in the public sector, we made them competitively bid for it. When I was in the general contracting business years ago, I noticed that whenever the government in Idaho or California wanted to build a bridge or they wanted to build a building or something, would let it out to bid. And so you'd go over and look at the plans down at the Department of Transportation or over here at HUD or wherever the agency that was seeking these bids, and you'd take a look at the plans, and then you would submit what's called a sealed bid. I bid on a lot of those jobs. And I'd take a copy of the plans, and I'd photocopy them down at the office and bring them back to my office. And then I would sit there, and we'd go over it and figure out, well, how many hours is it going to take us to build this building, and how many, how many nuts and bolts, and how many pounds of nails, and how many boards. We'd submit a competitive bid. Sometimes you get it if you're the low bidder. Sometimes you don't. Now we have these no-bid contracts. What do you think of that? That's where the politicians in office take your tax dollars and they just go spend them. And if they don't have the tax dollars to spend, that's because they gave you a tax cut, then they just borrow the money on your credit card. They just take your name, and they just go down there, after all, you're a taxpayer, a deep pockets taxpayer, and so they just go out here and borrow the money and send you the bill, or your children the bill, or whatever, to be paid off in years to come. And this is the way this is being operated. And that's what led me to believe, what the hell's going on here? Have we taken total leave of our senses? Have we become insane? You people would not call a contractor out of the Yellow Pages and say, come remodel my kitchen and send me the bill. But you go over to Iraq and you say, hey, let's go fight a war. Just send me the bill. I'll pay it. What the hell is this all about? Go ahead, just buy as many Humvees as you want and send me the bill. Well, the bill's $225,000 now. For one of these $40,000 Humvees, you're not paying a quarter of a million. Somebody says, well, my God, you got to put some armor plating on them. Okay. Well, how much does it cost for the armor plating? Did anybody ever get any competitive bids? Can anybody tell me, what does it cost to armor plate one of those Humvees? Is it $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, or is it $200,000? And were there any other competitors out there that would do the job a little cheaper? You know, rather than Halliburton, is there some other company out there that might like the business and maybe would do it for half that? Just a wild thought. I thought I'd throw that out to you. It's called competitive bid. It's a wild new concept to the American way of life, I know, but mull it over. Maybe it's got some merit. Of all the funds for the military, 36% goes to the Air Force, 33% to the Navy, and 16% to the Army, which does the lion's share of the fighting. The numbers are staggering for the Air Force and Navy. Now, the soldier gets the short end of the stick. How many of our fine young Americans died in Iraq and Afghanistan because they lacked the proper equipment or training, and how many of them were unfit to be there in the first place? The war has not brought democracy or freedom to Iraq or to Afghanistan. It has devastated those countries, and in the process, we have allowed Georgia and the neocons in Congress to steal our own democracy and freedom through the Patriot Act. And our leadership is made up of a bunch of crooks, incompetents, and perverts, and we're no longer a moral, viable force. Now, our ancestors and our corporations are being looted, and our investors and corporations are being looted by these Wall Street corporate American, and many of our politicians along with them. And we also allow these so-called bipartisan commissions to tell us what to do. And we're being dictated to by these Illuminists. What do you think of that? And this guy's name is Robert Chapman. What'd you think of that statement? You know, it reminds me here, think about this now for a second. I haven't heard much about the Air Force or the Navy in this war over in Iraq. Now, I don't doubt that we need navies and air forces. But as far as I can tell, the 130 or 50,000 foot soldiers over there and their Humvees and their tanks and so on are doing the lion's share of the fighting over there. But do you think that the admirals and the Pentagon say, now, wait a minute, since the Army is engaged in this war and we admirals over here aren't doing a hell of a lot, you know, we're not fighting a big naval war over here, the Al-Qaeda people aren't sinking our aircraft carriers lately, therefore maybe we should take some of the Navy money and spend that over here on the Army to replace a lot of these armored trucks and Humvees and personnel carriers and things like that. Do you think any admiral ever stood up in the Pentagon and say, listen, let's take a lot of this money that we're spending on ships and all this other crap here in the Navy that we're not using right now, and let's spend it on the Army? Has anybody ever thought of that? I don't know. I'm just a crummy plumber, you know. But if we were out on a job someplace and we were spending money in our plumbing shop over here and we're spending it on four or five places, but we find one place over here that we got a critical need, you know what we do? We spend the money over here on the critical need rather than spend it on everybody that's got his hand out. We call that common sense. Common sense. Just, you know, this is the building we're working on. This is the one that we need to be spending the money on. This is the one that we're going to sell first. So therefore, we need to put our resources over here where it's going to do the most good. It reminded me of this bridge. We had this Hurricane Katrina. Remember down here in Louisiana last year? Hurricane Katrina goes down there, causes $500 billion worth of damage. And we got a senator up here in Alaska And his name is Ted Stevens, and he's got a lot of seniority. And so they want to build a $236 million bridge up here. It's called the Bridge to Nowhere. Do you remember that story? The $236 million bridge to nowhere. Now, I would think, just being a crummy plumber over here, not having a PhD now, not being a politician with a lot of letters after my name, not having a lot of seniority here in the Congress, but it would seem like to me that if I was Ted Stevens, I'd say, now listen, now we Alaskans are entitled to our share of the federal budget. But because of this emergency, our brothers down, you know, the fellow Americans in New Orleans probably need this $236 million down there to bail the mud and muck out of their houses more than we need a bridge to nowhere. So why don't we Alaskans, you know, buckle down and let's send our $236 million down to New Orleans where the money is more needed. I know that's a wild, off-the-wall concept, but, you know, out here in the real world, in our families, you know, when an emergency comes up and we have money that we're spending on Disneyland or money that we're spending on videos or big-screen TVs, and an emergency comes up like our house burns down, instead of taking our savings account and buying videotapes that we no longer have a video VCR to play in because it burned up in the house, we take the money to rebuild our house, don't we? Wouldn't we take every dollar that we could get our hands on to do that, which is more important right now? It would seem like to me that soldiers on the ground in Baghdad are more important than aircraft carriers, wouldn't you? Now, I admit I'm not an admiral, and I don't have any Navy experience, but it would just seem like to me that the emergency at the time would require the funding at the time, and that maybe instead of a new weapons system for the Air Force, that maybe some armor for the Humvees might be more in order. Just a crazy off-the-wall thought from a damn plumber, but I thought I'd share that with you. That's the kind of thing that you get from newsletters, you know. Katie Couric hasn't reported on that story, and I don't think she ever will. But I thought that I would report on that story because that's what you get from the International Forecaster and Bob Chapman. And that's the first paragraph. First paragraph. This newsletter has 19 pages. It comes out twice a week, so it's about 40 pages a week. It comes out on Wednesday and Friday. Okay, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a friendly reminder that this is the end of the program and that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.